Hello, and welcome to the Learning and Development Podcast, presented by 360 Learning, a podcast that explores L&D that works with those who are making it work. In this episode, I'm speaking with Donald Taylor about the recently published L&D Global Sentiment Survey of 2024. But before we get into it, and if you're enjoying this podcast, please do give us a 5-star rating on your podcast app of choice to help others to find us, and thank you if you've done so already. Now, let's get into it. Donald, welcome to the Learning and Development Podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here, David.
So, Don, we're going to discuss the latest findings from the 2024 L&D Global Sentiment Survey. But before we do, could you explain to us what the sentiment survey is, how long it's been going, and what you hope it achieves?
Going for 11 years, and it's a very simple, short survey. We tried to get as much coverage from internationally as possible. It started off asking one question. We've now expanded that to 4 questions, of which the same single question is obligatory. What will be hot in workplace L&D in the next year? We also ask the other questions, which is, where do you work? Where do you live? Where are you located? And those are multiple choice. And the text question is, what's your biggest L&D challenge for the following year? So that's what it does. What do we aim to achieve with it? Well, we aim to find out what is going to be popular and important in L&D in 3 or 4 years' time, by which I mean this. The survey this year had 3,270 people answer it. That's a lot of people. They're self-selecting. We go out there, we try to get hold of them through a combination of social media, direct messaging, and email. But people decide whether to come on or not, so they're self-selecting. It's not representative of everybody in learning development. It's not like a political poll, which is very carefully conducted. So the people we get choose to come on, they're the people who are excited, enthusiastic about new ideas. They tend to be the innovators, the early adopters on that diffusion of innovation curve. So those people who are excited, they're sharing their ideas. Not all the ideas which are thought of as being hot right now go on to become widely adopted, but every idea which is widely adopted at some point was thought of as being exciting by a small bunch of people. So what I'm trying to do is spot, well, of the ideas that people are talking about now, which ones are going to go on to be more widely adopted? Which are going to be the winners? Maybe it's between 10 and 25% of the ideas we're talking about now. All right, who are the winners? That's what makes this survey exciting for me, and that's its purpose.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Don. And I know that that personally, it served as a barometer. I kind of think that it's, you know, we're all set sail on the good ship L&D. And I think that it's useful to know that that first of all, you're on the right path. That if you're thinking about those what's hot, what's not, perhaps what was hot a few years ago, and you want to test, you know, whether this is still hot, as you say, which I think is really valuable. What's the challenge or what's the concern for you? We kind of understand and sense check. A lot of people in L&D work in isolation, don't we? So this is a good way of testing that and almost getting the wisdom of the crowd.
Yeah, and the crowd can be wise. The crowd can also be misled. And it's important that there's somewhere between the wisdom of the crowd and the derangement of the mob. We have to work out what's going on here. Sometimes we need to say, yeah, everyone's talking about this, but honestly, it's not going to happen. And we've seen the same pattern over the years with the survey. Something starts off super hot, gets a lot of votes. And over the years, the number of votes it attracts declines because it goes from being super hot to being something else. Maybe business as usual. Maybe it's just it was too complicated and we decided not to do it. So we need to figure out, well, what exactly is going on. And that's where we have to add our experience and thinking and context to the numbers. The data is just a bunch of numbers about what people feel about things. With the addition of the personal context, that's when it really starts to come to life for people. So I always say to people, don't treat the report and the survey as being answers to questions, but rather as ways of provoking thinking and provoking questions for you to answer yourself.
And there's so much that that you've explained there that we'll come back to. But moving on to this year's findings, Don, how would you sum up the results?
Well, like everything else this year, it could be summed up in 2 letters, AI. But there's a lot behind that as well. So what does it mean when everyone votes for AI and it becomes something which is dominating our thinking? I think for me, it's actually that verb dominate is what really goes through the whole survey this year, is this idea that AI is absorbing our attention, on the survey, it absorbs our votes. It's also driving our sense of what's important and dictating the challenges that we're responding to. So it's not just that people are saying it's hot. It's actually determining a lot about how we're thinking about the world.
And it's overwhelmingly so, isn't it, number one? But before we get into what's at the top of the tree there, I'd love to know, were there any big differences between geographies and the roles of the respondents?
Surprisingly, last year, there were considerable differences between the roles of respondents. This year, not so much. There were a few differences. So, for example, if we look at the interest that people paid to, or the interest people had in personalization, it was placed fifth for the workplace learning development group, which is about half the respondents. But for the vendors, personalization came much higher. It was second. So that was for them, 10.5% of them voted for it, 7.1% of the workplace L&D. So there is a difference there, certainly, that perhaps the vendors are either there, see the value of it, and they're trying to spread that, or they've got something to sell, and they're trying to shift it. Personally, I think personalization is one of the obvious and very valuable implementation points for AI. So I think the vendors will have a point. Coaching and mentoring, on the other hand, whereas personalization was fifth for workplace R&D, coaching and mentoring was sixth, but nobody else seemed to think it was as important. It was, for the vendors, it was down at number nine. Even for the consultants and freelancers, coaching and mentoring was at number eight, with lower scores on the votes. And for me, just as personalization is a great use case for AI, so is coaching and mentoring. I think there's an incredible amount we can do with it. But it's almost as if people, well, let's not second guess what's going on in people's minds. But it may be that people are looking at just those terms and they have a meaning attributed to it. Oh, coaching and mentoring, that's people doing coaching. People supported by AI doing coaching is potentially hugely valuable. And I'm surprised that wasn't bigger across all of the work groups. Quickly, one thing about the regions, there was much less regional disparity. I mean, you can look at individual countries and how, for example, micro-learning varied across the countries. But the big difference for the regions continues to be, and it's extraordinary how predictable this is every year, but it's the difference between North America and South America. So in North America, personalization has always scored above the vote for collaborative learning. In South America, it's the other way around. Collaborative learning has always come first and personalization lower down. But this year, it seems to have been exacerbated. So personalization, number two in North America, collaborative learning, number two in South America. In South America, personalization was fourth. But in North America, collaboration was 10 with just 3.5% of the vote. Now, when you ask people, why is this? And I try to avoid easy, cheap explanations. Oh, it's the culture, because it's such an easy bucket to throw into things. But honestly, when I tell people in the North America or in South America, look at these differences, what's going on? Well, they always say, oh, it's the culture. Now, we're individualistic in the North and in the South. They say we are social, we are collaborative. There may well be something in that, but it's something that's very difficult to prove. All I can do is each year point it out as a regularly repeating trend. And it's important to remember that big table that I show of these things listed according to 3,000 people is the aggregation of 3,000 people's views, and they will differ a lot. And across Europe, even, you see huge variations between countries about what is thought to be important. So it's well worth remembering that we don't all think the same. Thank goodness. We are not homogenous.
No, that's right. And where I see the value in that, having run a regional learning and development department, is that I'm going to have, well, I supported 45 different countries across Europe, Middle East and Africa. And I think that, but also having a US head office. So the mandate would come from the US to have regional adaptation, and of course that comes through a real bottleneck of one or two people before it then goes local. And of course you can have some local freedoms, but we need regional, if not global, consistency. So what you've highlighted there are the difficulties in doing so.
It is a huge issue, and this is not purely US problem, because I've seen the same thing happen from the UK elsewhere. But there's this belief that, oh, we're the headquarters and we're going to tell people what to do. And it doesn't always mean that the audience is going to be receptive to you, even though it works for you administratively and perhaps in terms of coherent messaging. You may have to bend and adapt a bit further than you'd like to in order to make sure that you have an impact locally.
Yeah, that's right. And what was it? There was a hot word about a decade or so ago. Remember glocal? I don't know if it's still being used. We'll have to see if there's a sentiment survey for language somewhere. But Don, let's go into the actual findings here. You mentioned that AI is overwhelmingly number one, but you know this isn't a debate that's been happening within our profession. It's a conversation across wider business and society as well. I'd love to know, what do you think is interesting and concerning L&D right now about AI?
It's not just L&D, to be fair. The noise around artificial intelligence has been so dominant that it's been impossible to escape. I looked at the front covers of the Daily Star. We're recording a video here, aren't we? Okay, so here we are from October the 4th. We've got Daily Star. Now, if you're not familiar, this is like National Enquirer. It's a red top tabloid paper. And this in October says, psycho scumbag chatbots aren't all bad. I thought, well, that's ridiculous. So many things about it. Firstly, that it's AI being portrayed as a killer robot. And then it's made the front page of a tabloid newspaper where normally it might be a celebrity or a football team. But then I went back and I checked out what's happening on the front page of the Daily Star in 2023. AI was the headline story in at least 10 editions, the 10 I could find. There may well have been more. Each time portrayed with a robot and always with evil intent. The word kill, blow up, the end of the world was coming. Actually, the stories themselves are reasonably coherent if they're written in a racy style. But that level of noise means that it's been impossible to escape the idea of AI, whatever you're doing. And also, very often it comes with an emotional attachment to it. In this case, the emotional attachment is, look, AI is potentially very dangerous. And then at the same time, every week, sometimes every day, something comes out where you think, wow, look at that. How on earth is that possible? And literally, if I do a talk about what's happening with AI or L&D, I have to check the night beforehand, what's the latest? So I was in Madrid last week doing a talk and I had to, oh my goodness, this new OpenAI text-to-video tool comes out from OpenAI, and it is absolutely mind-blowing. So we're faced with this combination of the extraordinary and the perilous, and in between this vast gap of ignorance. We don't know really how to put this stuff to use or what to do with it. So when I've been traveling, I spent a lot of time at the end of last year traveling, listening and talking to people about what's happening in our field. The one word that was used everywhere, whether people's first language was English or not, was overwhelm. There was a sense that I can't escape people talking about this and I don't know what to do about it. So to answer your question, I think L&D is not unlike everybody else at the moment. It's excited but puzzled about what to do. And that's why AI tops the survey this year with 21.5% of the vote for what's hot. It's also the thing people find most challenging about the year ahead. We've never had that before, that the two questions, the hot question and the challenge question, have the same answer. That sort of sums up where we are with AI.
Yeah, wonderful. And I'd love to tap into some opinion as well here. I know you said that you can't read too much into the data, Donald, but you many years in L&D. And so to explore this a little further, I remember a headline in the Financial Times in May last year, and it said that one of the first casualties of generative AI has been education. And it said that the share price of certain firms had plummeted. Yeah. And you could attribute this to there being not so much of a need for educational content in a format that perhaps we'd been used to for many, many decades. And we're talking about published content a lot of the time, because Why would you publish stuff when you've got a dynamic tool such as generative AI? But then you've also got this reticence on the other side that you've got IT and security teams in company L&D who are perhaps slamming the brakes on and stopping perhaps more ambitious and forward-thinking L&D teams from actually rolling their sleeves up. So I suppose you've got, from many angles, you've got either this reticence because of the establishment of, as far as education and corporate education is concerned, and then you've got the slamming the brakes on from an internal security and maybe even ethics perspective, and somewhere in between, L&D are sitting. So I'd love to know what you're hearing on or what you're observing as far as corporate. Like, let's look at in-company L&D first, because I suppose they're going to be waiting for their vendors to catch up, because I'm certainly seeing from the other side there's an arms race. Who's going to get to equip L&D with safe and secure generative AI tools so that they can go full steam ahead, build the number one platform, and you know, and become synonymous with it? But of course, we all serve internal L&D, so I wonder what you're seeing and hearing on the ground.
You're absolutely right to portray it in that way, this sort of confusion and this dichotomy between, on the one hand, the desire to do something, the idea there's power there, and the very real concerns. And looking through the concerns people had in the survey, which I did with Egle Vinauskaita last year about the focus report on the use of AI in L&D, one of the big concerns that came out, which was one of the barriers that stopped people exploiting it, was data security. People were unsure what would happen if they did something wrong. So that's undoubtedly what I'm seeing as a major concern. There's another thing as well, which is perhaps less tangible and more to do with a question of identity, which is how L&D sees itself. I think L&D sees itself as being, and it is seen as being, the producer of material, the bit of the organization that churns out content. Now, if you can take something, press a button, and you've seen this, you can put information into a system and produce a bit of content. You can produce an entire course. You can produce an extremely sophisticated course very quickly at the press of a button that would have taken days to produce. Now, that's a challenge to the identity of L&D. Now, I don't know if this is happening consciously, but I think for a lot of people, that's enough also to make people think, do I really want to go any further with this? Because it's not so much that I'm challenging my identity, that would be part of it, but also, what on earth do I do if my job is not producing courses? The answer is there is an awful lot for L&D to do, plenty we should be doing. But I think it's a fundamental challenge to how L&D sees itself. And we don't have the working systems that enable us to say, okay, well, you know, this part of the organization that used to be about producing content, well, it's now that big. Yeah. All right. That's a process. And we're going to do all our other processes around it. And when we want some content, we'll just press some buttons there and make it happen. It's not that simple, of course, but we don't think about it in that way. So much of what happens in L&D is driven by that big part of our department, which is the production of content, rather than that being a part of a larger process to do with giving people the skills and knowledge they need to do their jobs. That switch of mindset, that's what we're doing, may be what's holding back part of the implementation of AI in L&D.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think so much of it comes down to identity, how we perceive ourselves and our value in our organizations, and then what's projected onto us about what our value is. It's kind of an ecosystem that sustains, supports, and maintains the way that L&D is done that perhaps is under threat.
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing in a way if it causes a shakeup, but it does mean we have to get ready for the change and be ready to take advantage of it once people are ready for us to be doing something different. It's both how we see ourselves and how the rest of the organization sees us. We really there's one question which I think I ask in the conclusion to the report, which is, look, if you're spending 10 hours a week, and that's a low number for most people, if you're spending 10 hours a week producing and maintaining content, and you can now produce that in 1 hour thanks to AI, what will you do with the remaining 9 hours? And if the answer is I'm going to produce more content, then that's the wrong answer.
Yeah.
nobody needs more content. There is a superfluity of content in the world. Take those 9 hours and use it to do the strategic stuff that will secure the role of you and L&D in the organization.
Yeah, yeah, I think the wise words. And in the report, Don, you go on to predict what is likely to happen with AI in 2024. So what are your three predictions?
I'm always very, very wary about making predictions. You know, it's a mug's game. I'm very happy to report what other people are saying, but I've said the following. I said, firstly, AI will continue to develop. That's a pretty sure bet. You know, will we get general AI? I don't think so, but I think we'll get enhanced versions of the major GPTs that are out there, and we'll also see more consumer tools around it, which is great. It means that we've got more tools to use in L&D. Also a challenge, of course, because it means that the organization has more tools that it can use. And there will be some tools for L&D, but largely there'll be matters of increasing personal efficiency. I do think, by the way, that we're seeing that already with copilots, and that's kind of doing the job of L&D. It's helping people be more productive at their desks. That's our job, but hey, L&D is not involved anywhere. So what do we have to do with that? There's a large role we can play, but we need to think about how that affects L&D. Second prediction, I think it will move from experimentation to application. I think 2023 was the year of attraction and experimentation, and 2024 will be the year of application, at the beginning of it anyway. And we'll start understanding that AI is not this weird, huge thing that we don't understand like Skynet. It's a series of different applications of models and ways of dealing with large amounts of data with algorithms that enable us to do things, rather as electricity moved from being this vague force that was scary and exciting in the Victorian era to then being implemented and became an integral part of the manufacturing and individual domestic life in the 20th century. So that will happen. The third thing is that there will be a backlash. There'll be a backlash against AI content. Stay with me. You're too young, David, too young by half to remember the introduction of PowerPoint. But of course, when it came out, and this must be like the mid-1990s, it only took a year or two before people started saying, PowerPoint is the enemy. Look at all these awful PowerPoint presentations. PowerPoint sucks. And I haven't done the research, but honestly, if you query PowerPoint sucks, you'll see a spike somewhere in the 1990s. It hasn't gone away. The fault is not the tool. The fault is the people who think that they can do great stuff with the tool without knowing how to present rather than how to put words on a slide. Now, the same thing's going to happen with generative AI. It's a tremendously powerful tool. Video, text, everything else. We'll have a lot of content being produced inside L&D and outside L&D as well. A lot of people saying, hey, I've got this idea to share, producing stuff which in the 1990s we used to call the angry fruit salad school of design, where every color, every font is used, it's just horrible and it doesn't work, right? And that's a lot of that is going to happen. Nobody's going to blame the person doing it. They're going to blame the tool. This AI stuff sucks. It's all rubbish. We can expect a lot of that, I'm afraid, towards the end of the year.
Yeah, quite rightly as well. I think that those all seem very, very sound.
What's your prediction? Come on, I've taken the risk with three predictions. What's your one prediction?
Right. So mine's a hope, and that is that if we're freeing ourselves up to be the people who are in a bunker creating these courses or creating these PowerPoints, we don't need to anymore because we've got our co-pilots, whether that be for content or slides and the like. It means that we see ourselves differently from a small team with a vast workforce that we can only support top down to one where we see our roles in truly understanding the problems in our organizations, perhaps even help to rank them with generative AI, and that we then are repositioned at working on the biggest people development problems across our organization and do that via cohort. I personally think that we'll make bigger impact, more planned and demonstrable impact as a result of that. But that all takes that re-identification that you were talking about earlier from the providers of learning to those who are that team that is relied upon for upskilling and reskilling in our organizations? How does that
I'm voting for David James after that extraordinary speech. Definitely. I hope it happens. I hope it happens. It should do. You're describing very well the way the ground is laid and made possible for it to happen. Let's hope it does. Well, I'll come back next year. We'll see how far do we get down that path.
Brilliant. Well, I already consider myself the master of segues, Don, because the next question's about reskilling and upskilling, which has maintained its position in the top two, which isn't a surprise as it's a priority for our business leaders and even our governments. So does its position suggest, do you think, that we're making progress with it or that we're still trying to find out how to do it?
I'm going to give a very depressing answer, which is neither. I think it shows that fewer people are talking about it. What the Global Sentiment Survey reflects is a number of things. It reflects the reality of people's lives. It reflects the challenges they have, the context they're in. It also reflects what I call the wordscape. The wordscape is like a landscape, but it's the words that are around us. We don't really notice them, but they sort of permeate our daily lives. I put reskilling, upskilling into the survey in 2021. It was number one in 2021, two and three. And the reason is that in January 2020, World Economic Forum launched a report called the Reskilling Revolution, which was like a spark that that lit an explosion of other reports coming out from major consultancies and so on. Initially, this was all around the need to have reskilling, upskilling because the world of automation was upon us. Things were going to change. As we went into COVID, it became, we need to reskill and upskill because the way we're going to work is going to change. We're going to be working remotely. So they were sort of similar but different problems, but it doesn't matter. Reskilling, upskilling is the answer. Once everyone's talking about this stuff and the reports are coming out and people are commenting on the reports and other people are writing blogs about the reports and the comments on the reports, there's this wordscape of repeating the words reskilling, upskilling until everybody thinks it's important. I'm not saying it's not important, it is. And you're right about governments. It's one of the big challenges that governments face. But we are facing real issues around automation and what people are going to do in the future. But I don't think necessarily that it's that which is being reflected. I think what's being reflected is the fact that it's been a hot topic people have been talking about, and it's slightly gone off the boil because people are talking about AI. I don't think we are tackling properly the problem of reskilling and upskilling at a national, sectoral or individual. Well, actually, some individual companies are doing a good job with it. Unilever is one, and I know others that are. The country that's probably taken the most coherent approach is Singapore, but of course it's able to. It's a city state with strong control and a limited amount of it's not large. It's not like UK or USA. It's small enough that you can take action fairly quickly. So I don't think we've got it right. But I think that's not reflected on the survey. What's reflected on the survey is that fewer people are talking about it. Very long answer, David, to a very short question. Sorry about that.
No, love it. The deeper we go, the better. That's what I think, Don. Now, you mentioned in the survey that, and I'm going to quote you here, that trends could indicate a fundamental shift in how the L&D profession sees itself and its role, which we've touched on. But this part here, shifting from the personal to the technical. What do you mean by this?
Yeah. What I mean is that if you look at the results for this year and you go back, it looks quite a lot like 2020. If you look at the top five of the table, and there's a big difference in the votes between the top five and everything else on the table, then the answers there, the things that people are voting for, they were there in 2020, well, with a couple of exceptions. So reskilling, upskilling was new on the table. That came in, and that's on the top five at the moment. Skills-based talent management was new on the table, and that's here. But the top four in 2024, AI, reskilling, upskilling, skills-based talent management, personalization, adaptive delivery, and learning analytics are all things which are fueled by good use of data. In 2020, it was the same things, but we had collaborative and social learning there as well, which is nowhere on that top five, nowhere near it this year. What we saw during the pandemic was an increase in interest in collaborative and social learning and in coaching and mentoring, which has fallen away dramatically this year. I am torn between two explanations as to why the interest in data has picked up because those top five options have all either stayed where they are or have increased in interest this year, and everything else has fallen away. Why has that happened? When during the pandemic, we had this interest in human factors, which have fallen away. So what's happened there? Either the interest in AI has acted as a sort of boost to everything that deals with data and skills and has pulled everything else up, those things up the table on its coattails, which is possible. That's one explanation. Another explanation is that there is a natural shift, and we've seen this actually over time, towards the things on the table which are to do with data and technology and skills moving up the table and other things going further down. Mm-hmm. It might be a combination of the two. My feeling is that actually it is a combination of the two, and there is a shift in what L&D sees as its role as being much more towards the idea of data and skills being integral to what we do. Mm-hmm. I think that's good. I don't like the fact that it seems to be at the cost of collaborative and social learning, coaching and mentoring. Mm-hmm. I think one of the great uses of AI is to enable us to spread collaboration faster and better in the organization. And certainly for coaching, it's an absolutely fabulous tool that enables us to scale quality coaching by people supported by AI throughout the organization. So I think that it may be people aren't seeing those options with the richness they deserve, but are latching onto the more obviously technical ones. Again, a long answer to your question, but you threw the quote at me, David. So I had to think on my feet to find the answer as I was talking to you. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I'd like to throw in there as well. Well, maybe another conversation point here that those at the top, which are with an emphasis on data, could be because we in business are in a prolonged period of. Well, it's tough times, but yes. Like in terms of growth and economies are suffering. So during that time, learning and development is generally under the cosh to cut costs. But because it's so prolonged, maybe we are being pushed to justify the spend at all. And to justify that, we need data. And perhaps, and this would be about time, Don, maybe this is a bit of a leap, perhaps our learning metrics don't cut it anymore. The number of days and hours spent learning, which has always been a perk rather than an indicator of successful learning and development, satisfaction, NPS, all of those things which are useful indicators, but by no means equate the spend to success. And I wonder whether, and I'd love to know what you think, Don, whether this prolonged period of tough economic conditions may have been a contributory factor.
Well, it may have been, but don't forget that's more in the UK probably than elsewhere. In the US, for example, things are not utterly perfect for L&D, but you know, the people, I don't think they're suffering as bad as we have been in the UK. And I think in Europe, things are similar but different as well. So it's not the same throughout the world, but I haven't seen the dip being reflected differently throughout the world according to economic conditions. Probably I don't have enough data to be able to say. Interestingly, the challenge of showing impact has actually fallen away slightly this year. So when we say, what's your big challenge this year? People haven't been talking about that as much this year as they were last year. Of the categories of importance, it's number five this year, whereas last year it was number four. But of course, having said that, everything's been shoved down a bit because AI grabbed all the votes this year. Mm. Well, actually, that's the wrong way of putting it. But AI certainly dominated people's thinking this year in the challenges. So it may be people are thinking about that rather than the impact side of it. But I like the thesis. I like the idea that because of that, we are driven more towards thinking about data. And if we are, that's probably not a bad thing.
Mm. So let's talk about the bigger drop-offs then from previous years, Don. What have we seen as being hot in recent years that have either dropped down or dropped off?
Well, dropping off last year, sadly, we said goodbye to mobile delivery, which had been a long-standing member of the group, had been on the survey since the very first year when it topped it. Mm. But it that was the classic case of something that had gone from being super hot because it was new and exciting to being run-of-the-mill business as usual. Certainly in developed economies, in other parts of the world, for example, in South Africa, we had a strong vote for mobile delivery a couple of years ago because it's so important for maintaining learning across difficult infrastructure issues they have there. But, you know, that's what happens. That's one of the ones that drops off because it's reached its time. Learning experience platforms were super hot when they were first introduced onto the survey, and since fell down and was the biggest loser this year, about 1.7%, 1.8% it fell down this year. And that was in contrast to some other technologies. So micro learning and virtual and augmented reality. So you might think these all sort of fit in the same technological box, but actually they held up very well. VR and AR and micro learning dropped by less than 0.5%. Whereas LXPs dropped by 1.8%. So what's happening? I think for micro learning and virtual and augmented reality, there are very clear use cases for those, which people can see. I kind of think that LXPs started off as an interesting differentiator from LMSs 5 years ago. Now I think people don't see the difference so much. Mm. And they've got to the point of thinking, well, these are now regular tools we use, but they're not hot in the same way as they were when we had dramatic new entrants into the market, bringing them in a few years ago. So those are the big drop-offs. We've talked about collaborative and social learning, which sadly was a big drop-off this year. The other ones I'm concerned about is the value options. So that's showing value, consulting with the business, and performance support. Those three options have all been more or less steady for the past 5 years in the middle of the table, unusually, because normally, as we say, things go down. They all fell this year by around 1.5%. And that worries me if people don't think that's important anymore because, oh, look, AI. And they've shifted their attention from serving the business to the latest shiny thing. I don't think that's good news.
No. There's so much interesting stuff that you've mentioned there. What I find hope in the upper echelons of the survey there is it seems to speak of L&D rolling its sleeves up. You know, this is something we need to crack, whereas some of the ones you've just described falling down is almost that tech will save us. So that, I suppose, is perhaps helpful. That's what, you know, it's another way I thought of reading that, and I'll put the caveat, you already explained, we don't know because we've just got the data, but yeah. makes for a good chat.
Well, it does. And I think that, you know, if you're interpreting, if you're listening to this and you're reading a report and you want to interpret it with your mates in L&D or with other people in the organization or people outside, that's a really good point. And we'll probably come to that at the end about how to take this forward. It's all about context. But you're right, David. We don't quite know what's going on. It is about context. And if that strong showing of data and reskilling, upskilling, those things at the top of the table indicate L&D being prepared to roll their sleeves up and make some things happen, great. I'm all pleased about that.
Yeah. Again, so I suppose as we point towards the end of the conversation, I mentioned earlier that I personally used the survey for many years to validate my thinking and support conversations with different client groups. And then as a vendor to ensure we are considering what's in the zeitgeist. Mm. So what do you think and hope, Don, these findings do for the profession and those key areas of it?
I hope that it acts as a stimulus for conversation. That's always the thing. I tell people, look, there are a few answers in this, which are largely to do with numbers, but there are many more questions. So use it as a way of driving conversation and causing you to question what you're doing. Do not please say, oh, this is rating highly on the table. I must go and do something about it, because it might be your context doesn't demand it at all. It may be that whatever's high on the table is irrelevant to you, but make the decision. So look at it and say, well, everyone's talking about reskilling, upskilling. That's not important to us, but actually personalization really is for these reasons. Great. Use it as a fencing partner, a sparring partner to get your ideas in order. And a great way of doing that is in conversation with other people. So I hope that's how people are going to use this survey, as a way of helping formulate their ideas through questioning it and questioning what they're doing.
Yeah, wonderful. That's great advice. And so Don, as we look to wrap up, where can people find the report and perhaps any more information that you can provide around interpreting?
Best way to find it is go to the website, which I'm sure you'll put the link in the notes somewhere. But you know, it's donaldhtaylor.co.uk, and it'll be on there. Don't worry. In terms of interpreting it, I think the key thing for me is everybody's context is different. Your company, your country, your culture all of these things are unique to where you are and what you're trying to achieve. This shows what people are talking about. Mm-hmm. That's what it does. You know what's important to your organization, or if you don't, please hurry up and find out. Mm. And once you've got that in your mind, you can then say, well, given the context that we're in, which of these things are important to us? Which of these challenges resonate with us? Have you thought about something or not? And don't do it by yourself. This is the problem, of course, as we know, David. Most L&D departments consist of one, two, maybe three people. Mm. Find other people to chat with, maybe outside your organization to discuss it with. And then that way, hopefully, it'll be a way of you interpreting your context in a way that helps you meet your goals better.
Yeah, wonderful. And I'm sure you'd be open to folks connecting with you, Don, or, yeah, or certainly absolutely. Following your work. So how best should they do so?
LinkedIn, please drop that in the notes as well. I'm always here to serve the community. So please connect up with me on LinkedIn. Let's try and tackle the problems and also rise to the challenges of what's coming up in L&D in the future. It's a fantastic time to be in the field.
I couldn't agree more. Don, it's been, again, a fabulous report. I've relied on it for many, many years.
Thanks so much.
And it's something very important that you provide to the L&D community. So on behalf of all of us, thank you. And thank you very much for being a guest on the Learning and Development Podcast.
Great to be here. I look forward to coming back and finding out which of our predictions actually came true next year.
Let's do that. Thanks, Don.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to today's episode presented by 360 Learning. It was a wonderful opportunity to explore the Global Sentiment Survey with Donald and hope that we brought it to life for you. AI, along with upskilling and reskilling, are such big priorities for all of us. How do we take advantage of the huge opportunities that AI provides and do so to address skills development? I hope this conversation and others on this podcast have helped you to join the dots in some way. If this conversation has whet your appetite for good quality L&D chat and you'd like to get involved, you can now join the L&D Collective, of which I'm an active member. Join me and thousands of L&D peers via the link to the L&D Collective in the show notes. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, perhaps to suggest topics you'd like to hear discussed, you can tweet me at @DavidInLearning and connect on LinkedIn. Again, you'll find the links in the show notes. And goodbye for now.